I'm starting to get so freaked out about the supply chain collapse and economic situation that's coming. I find myself shopping online for belts for old John Deere tractors that I have because I feel like I need to stockpile belts, you know, alternator belts, fan belts, compressor belts, because I don't think we're going to be able to get any parts at all. And that's a weak link to the tractor. You know, if the belt doesn't work, you don't have a tractor. That's how crazy it's getting. And I even observe myself. I'm like, whoa, you're going like three layers deep on the supply chain stockpiling. Is that okay? And then I think, well, let's connect the dots and see where it's going here. And that's what I'm going to do for you today on the situation update. It is March 2nd, 2022. And this is Mike Adams. Thank you for joining me. Yes, I do own, John Deere tractors, rather old ones. Because I think they're going to stay running longer than everything else, but they do need belts. So here's what hit me today. I'm going to try to describe this to you here. And I'm glad that I waited to do this recording because I was really emotional a few hours ago. I was steaming mad, and I don't think I could have done this podcast without being very unchristian and filling it full of profanity with lots of M's and F's and SH's and all kinds of stuff. But I've calmed down since then, and I want to try to explain the realization that has hit me, and then, of course, what I think we might be able to do about it. So you know how I've been describing lately that I believe the deep state controlled by Obama, with the fake Biden president who can barely deliver a speech, it turns out. You know how I've said they plan to unleash cyber attack false flags against America, attacking the banks, you know, attacking the power grid and so on. And then they want to blame Russia. So there's been this understanding that Russia is going to be the scapegoat for all the takedowns, all the disasters, the economic collapse, even the vaccine deaths that are accelerating. It's all going to be blamed on Russia. And that's why Biden had to provoke a war. And then Putin, you know, apparently went along with it, for whatever his own reasons are. And then here we have this big global escalation. Well, now we're moving into the financial war chapter of this escalation. And this is where it really hit me. The West, and by the West, I mean, you know, Western Europe and the United States and so on. The West needs a global financial reset. And so they need a way to commit financial suicide, or I don't know, economic suicide, but they need to be able to blame it on Putin. And what they've unleashed now with the banking deplatforming, the SWIFT system disconnects, and everything else I'm going to share with you here, this, I finally come to realize, this is designed not to harm Russia, but to actually devastate the financial infrastructure of the United States and the rest of the West. So this is kind of like in the same way that America built the bioweapon. Gain of function research, NIH funding, gave it to China so that China could launch the bioweapon on humanity and devastate the United States and, of course, rig the election and then control America and drive it into the dirt. This is kind of like that. In fact, it's very, very similar, except now it's not a bioweapon, it's a financial weapon. And the financial weapon is being launched reportedly against Russia, but it's actually designed to boomerang back and destroy the United States. Okay. So this is what I'm going to try to describe for you here. And there's so many levels of evil involved in this. There are the globalists who know what's happening. They know they've already wargamed this whole thing. They know how this is going to end up utterly devastating America and the UK and France and Germany and so on. They know that. But then there are lower level people who are actually sort of the mid-level managers, like the bankers and so on. They don't know the big plan, but they're just too stupid to consider the long-term consequences of what they're doing. They have no idea about the global interdependencies of our complex economy. And so they're just going along with this, like, yeah, punish Russia. Cut them off from SWIFT, you know, block all the Russian people from being able to use their credit cards. No money transfers. And they think that that's going to hurt Russia. They have no idea it's going to devastate Western nations. And that's by design. So let's talk about what has actually happened. So it wasn't just that SWIFT cut off key Russian banks from being able to engage in SWIFT transactions. It's also Google Pay, Apple Pay. There's a payment system called Zoom, X-O-O-M, that's used by banks. There are other payment systems. There are lots of money handlers online, like PayPal and many others and competitors and so on. Almost all of them have cut off anybody who's Russian from any kind of transaction whatsoever. And they think, because they're stupid, they think this is punishing Russia. So here's the thing. Since we've had an international economy for quite a number of decades, there are lots of banks and institutions in the Western world that have loaned money to Russian businesses or Russian citizens or, you know, Russian entities, institutions, and so on. Now think about it. When you block or deplatform all Russians, you can't transact in finance at all. What does it mean? It means the Russian people can't make payments on their loans to Western banks. They can't meet their financial obligations even on, let's say, bond interest payments if they had issued bonds and the bondholders were in the West and so on. So suddenly you're going to have all of these, well, Western banks and Western institutions or whoever was making loans to the Russians, those loans are going to go into default. Well, who does that hurt? It hurts the Western banks. It doesn't hurt the Russian people or the Russian businesses in that case, because the Russian businesses just, oh, well, I guess we can't make payments on the loans anymore. Guess we just stop paying. But who's hurt is, of course, the banks that made the loans in the first place. Now, normally in a healthy economy, you might think, well, okay, so the banks write off some losses and then they go on and do business elsewhere. No big deal. Okay. That would be true in a normal economy, but this is not a normal economy. This is a global debt pyramid house of cards system that has contagion risk, which is unquantifiable because of the insane leveraging that has been taking place on investment instruments, not just since 2008 and the subprime mortgage collapse, but long before that. Actually, the origins of this begin in the 1990s under Bill Clinton, the first dot-com boom, irrational exuberance and all that, and all this money poured into the dot-com boom. And then when dot-com cratered, instead of fixing the problem, what did the U.S. government do? Oh, stimulus. Go out and spend. Go out and buy loans for everybody. And that created another bubble, which was the housing bubble. The housing bubble, remember that? Ninja loans, no income, no job applications. Yeah, anybody could buy a house, anybody could get a loan. And what should have normally been, you know, F grade loan quality, they were chopped up and rehashed and remixed into, you know, A++ tranches of debt that the banks were selling to investors and saying, this is good debt. This is awesome. It's housing. And then that was the subprime housing collapse, right? 2007, 2008. And by the way, on both of these, you know, I'm on the record predicting them publicly, predicted the dot-com collapse in 1998 and 99. And I publicly predicted the housing collapse before it happened as well. So then after the subprime collapse, we went into the everything bubble. And so there were massive bailouts, right? Remember that? $1 trillion bailouts. Oh, who got bailed out? Well, the favorite banks got bailed out. You know, JP Morgan, Bank of America, Wells Fargo. And then some people got left behind, you know, Bear Stearns didn't get the bailout. They're gone. And other investment firms just gone, gone. Goldman Sachs, ring a bell. So we went into the everything bubble. And the everything bubble was characterized by, well, of course, bubbles in the stock market, bubbles in the bond market, bubbles in the real estate market, bubbles everywhere, because it was all about printing more money, flooding the system with essentially free money or low cost money. Interest rates got lower and lower and lower. They were essentially zero under Trump, and the money printing went insane. And this went on all the way up to COVID. And then, I mean, we were already at insane levels when COVID hit under Trump. And then Trump said, well, let's crank up the printing presses even more. And Trump started handing out trillions of dollars in stimulus money. And then, of course, Biden continued that and said, I want more trillions under Biden, you know. And what they created, they created so much money that it dwarfed all the money creation in years previous in the whole history of the entire nation. And there was one point, I think, towards the end of 2020, and I don't know if this is still true, but at one point, the money created in the year 2020 represented 40% of all the money that had ever been created by the central bank in the history of the Federal Reserve. In 1 year, they increased the money supply by 40%. Understand? Now, you know, this is continuing. And now, of course, price inflation is kicking in because the dollar is collapsing. This entire system is held together by nothing but financial duct tape and bailing wire. And it's called new debt. Debt, debt, debt. You know, I live in Texas and I own tractors, as I mentioned. And although I am not officially a farmer, Texas farmers and ranchers, they can fix almost any piece of hardware with baling wire and duct tape, at least long enough to finish baling a field. You know, the hay bale is broken. Don't worry. We've got baling wire. And farmers and ranchers are very handy people. They're the kind of people you want to know, by the way, in a financial collapse. Just keep that in mind, because they can fix almost anything, even with very simple tools. Well, debt is the baling wire of the global economy. And just as on a ranch, the baling wire only holds together that combine machine for a very limited time. It's just enough to get it back to your barn where you can order the proper parts and do the proper repair and actually have a machine that will run long term. Well, debt is a temporary patch and it doesn't solve the underlying systemic problems of the highly leveraged global debt pyramid, which let's just call it a debt bomb or a debt landmine or something. And that exists at such a large scale that we are now talking hundreds of quadrillions of dollars of debt that is in, quote, synthetic instruments. Now, trust me, this is all going to make sense. This is all going to track back to Russia and Ukraine here in just a minute. So hang with me on this. So you got hundreds of quadrillions of dollars of debt. So remember, $1 billion, or let me say it this way. $1 million times 1,000 is $1 billion, right? And then $1 billion times 1,000 is $1 trillion. And then $1 trillion times 1,000 is $1 quadrillion, right? So in other words, in exponentials, orders of magnitude here, if $1 million, if you call that one unit, then let's see, $1 billion is 10 to the 3, $1 trillion is 10 to the 6, quadrillion is 10 to the 9th times your base unit of $1 million. So we're talking 9 orders of magnitude larger than $1 million. That's a quadrillion. And then the real global debt is hundreds of quadrillions of dollars. So add a couple more orders of magnitude. We're at 11 orders of magnitude larger than $1 million, which itself is already a pretty substantial sum of money, right? Now, the only thing holding this system together, as I mentioned, is debt. But where does this debt come from? How is it created? It's not just created by the central banks. This debt is created by other commercial banks and financial institutions, such as the JP Morgans of the world or various banks in the European Union, HSBC, and other money laundering institutions all over the world, right? I mean, you look at, there's banks in the UK, there's banks in Iceland, there's banks in Singapore, there's banks everywhere. Every one of these banks is a debt magnification machine. So they are issuing new debt based on fractional reserves because of their fractional reserve systems. But that's just the deposit side of things. They're actually creating new debt instruments on the speculation side of things. And that's a practice that was illegal under a law called Glass-Steagall, which I think, wasn't it Clinton, Bill Clinton, who revoked Glass-Steagall? I'm thinking that was around 1997 or 8, but I'd have to check. It's something in that range. But Glass-Steagall said that banks, retail banks that served customers, could not become speculative stock market investors, or basically hedge funds, you could say, that are also serving retail customers. So there was a firewall between retail banking and speculative debt creation bets, you know, the debt casino, which is what banking has become today. When that law went away, it allowed banks to go into the speculative markets and issue these tranches of debt, all based on fraud. And that's how we got the subprime mortgage collapse, by the way, in roughly 2008. It was just total fraud. They were taking fraudulent loans and they were just relabeling them. They're hashing them together and calling them A++ and selling those as debt instruments that they knew would collapse one day. Well, that problem never got solved in 2008. So think about it. Here we are 14 years later. The problem is so much worse, combined with all the stimulus money from COVID, all the extra money printing of the last 2 years or so. And folks, that is the only thing that has kept this global Western financial empire from experiencing a total collapse, is the stimulus money from COVID. You could even argue that the Western banks needed COVID because they needed the stimulus. They needed the adrenaline injection. You know, the kind where you have a, you know, 8-inch needle and you just stab someone right through the sternum, and you know, to start their hearts, you know, you just hit them with adrenaline. I think that was a scene in Pulp Fiction, come to think of it, or some similar movie. Stab them and get the heart going. That's what the banks needed with COVID stimulus money, and that's the only thing keeping them alive right now. But the systemic problems have never been resolved, not even addressed. They've been papered over with new debt. So here we are then, up to mid-February of 2022, and I'm talking about a milestone before Russia sent in the troops and the tanks and everything into Ukraine. Even at that time, the world, I should say the Western economic system, was on the verge of total collapse. Hence, the need for continued stimulus money printing, you know, quantitative easing. And yet, at the same time, there's so much money printing taking place that dollar devaluation was hitting hard and price inflation was becoming so noticeable that people were paying double for many things at the grocery store, double for gasoline, you know, 60% more for used vehicles and so on. It was already bad. And then now, boom, Putin invades Ukraine. Now, this was provoked by Western forces, and then Putin, you know, fell for it or something. I'm not sure what was going through his mind, but he is playing his part in this global theater of sorts, you could say. And so he has invaded Ukraine, and it's obvious he's not trying to bomb Ukraine into rubble. He's not launching bombs and missiles on, you know, to take down the entire infrastructure, you know, to destroy the water supply and internet and, you know, civilian buildings and apartments and everything. He's not bombing the cities in rubble. He's doing something different. It's like he wants to seize Ukraine as intact as possible, or perhaps he's there for show. Perhaps Putin is playing a role, because Putin at one point was part of the young global leaders of the World Economic Forum. Doesn't mean he takes orders from Klaus Schwab. I'm not saying that, but he was part of that group. And it does seem like a lot of events are being orchestrated by a team of players, doesn't it? Because once Putin invaded Ukraine and did token things like blowing away that television broadcast tower in Kiev, just took the tower down, you know, with a missile, but not bombing the city into rubble. then the Western nations began to put in all these economic sanctions that you now know about, the SWIFT system, the debanking of Russian banks, blocking Russian flights over Canada and most of Western Europe, halting business with Russian vodka manufacturers. That one really surprised me. I was like, what's vodka got to do with any of this? That seems a little outlandish. Russian vodka is some of the best herbal tincture making vodka in the world. And it doubles as emergency fuel for lanterns, it turns out. So with all this debanking and, you know, deplatforming of Russian businesses, and then how exports are being cut off. Because here's the other thing. Suppose someone in Germany or the UK or France needs to purchase, let's say, Russian natural gas or Russian fertilizer, because Russia manufactures most of the fertilizer for Europe and a lot of it for Asia as well. Or they want to buy, you know, Russian wheat that's grown in Western Russia. Well, in many parts of Russia, and Russia does export a lot of wheat, not just Ukraine, but Russia as well. Well, now these Western nations can't buy any of that stuff from Russia because the banking systems have deplatformed all connectedness. So you can't pay for things that could be exported out of Russia. And at the same time, Russian business owners can't make payments on loans that they have, and they can't purchase products that would be exported out of the UK or out of Germany or out of France or Spain or wherever, or, you know, all the Nordic countries. So what I'm building up to is this. What hit me so hard today that I had a little moment of panic. It's like, a little heart flutter there. Oh my God. Buy more tractor belts. In that moment, I realized that the world's debt-based debt bomb house of cards system is so fragile that all it's going to take is the slightest disturbance in the force, Luke, to bring the whole system down, because the Western system is incredibly fragile, whereas the Russian system has a lot more redundancy, it's a lot less complex, and it's more resilient. And so is China, by the way. So China is a lot more internally resilient with its own currency, its own gold reserves, and so on. China is not going to be brought down by this dollar devaluation global debt bomb. And neither is Russia. But what is going to be taken down is the dollar. And when the dollar is taken down because of the debt bomb implosion, then we're going to lose the global petrodollar status, upon which virtually all the wealth and comfort that the American people have experienced since World War II, all of that is going to be taken away overnight. You are no longer going to live in a world where your country can just print money and use it to buy goods from other countries that are actually making the goods, whether it be appliances or cars or computers or what have you. We in America, we for generations, since the end of World War II, we've been able to print money and use it essentially to commit a kind of international trade fraud where we hand other countries IOUs, effectively, you know, government-backed debt, here by these treasuries, right? And those countries have shipped us containers full of stuff. It's kind of a good deal for us, if you think about it. And that was only achieved because of the petrodollar agreements, where oil could only be bought and sold on world markets using the dollar as the currency. And that was an agreement that was enforced by Saudi Arabia, which is why the United States has defended the Saudi system of tyranny, authoritarianism, human rights abuses, civil rights abuses against women, for example. Incredible abuses by the Saudi regime. Well, it was all defended by the Bushes, right? And other presidents, and, you know, and the Clintons and so on. It was all defended because it's part of the petrodollar deal that secures America's economic hegemony around the world. That system is just about over. And what hit me is that by debanking Russia from the SWIFT system, Western nations, they just, shot themselves in the face with a financial shotgun, essentially. They just like pointed the gun at their face and pulled the trigger because this is going to accelerate the world moving away from the dollar or any kind of a dollar-based control system such as SWIFT. So Russia and everybody in Russia and everybody who wants to do business with Russia, which includes a lot of Europeans, a lot of French companies, German, Italy, Greece, and so on. Turkey, everybody, they're doing business with Russia. They're all now going to have to go to a parallel system, something that isn't SWIFT, something that isn't based in the dollar. So what are they going to go to? Well, China has a system, CIPS, and in that system, you buy renminbi. And then with the renminbi, you can then trade with Russia. So now suddenly anybody who wants to do trade with Russia, importing or exporting or make payments on loans or invest in Russian companies or whatever, because it's a big international interconnected economy, they're going to have to first go to China, buy China's currency. So what is happening to China's currency? The renminbi is going insane. It's going up in value very, very strong because there's now massive demand for the renminbi. For this very reason that I'm pointing out here, I don't think the Western media has even bothered to cover this, or maybe they haven't figured it out yet. But this move by the West, this just made China the dominant economic force on planet Earth, and it means there's going to be a shift. The petrodollar is going to be abandoned, and China is going to have the new global currency, probably. And Russia, by the way, for the last several years, since about 2018, they've been selling off U.S. treasuries like mad. And guess what they've been buying? Gold. Like solid gold bars. And Russia has purchased over $90 billion in gold in the last few years. You think they knew what was coming? You think they knew that treasuries were going to become worthless and gold was going to become incredibly valuable? Of course they knew. China's been buying gold like crazy. China's also been dumping treasuries. You know, lots of people and nations and institutions are dumping treasuries because what's going to happen to the U.S. dollar when everybody says, no, we don't want to be ruled by an authoritarian banking interconnection system where we can be shut off at any time if we criticize Biden. You know, we don't want to be subjected to your financial censorship and deplatforming, because that's what this is. This is the insane censorship of the left, the radical left, that wants to control what you're allowed to say. Oh, you can't disagree about vaccines. You can't disagree about origins of COVID. You can't disagree. There's only one allowable narrative. And now the same thing is true with the entire banking system. If you disagree, you'll be cut off of PayPal and your retail banking and international banking and money transfers. You'll be put on a list. It's basically a social credit score list, and it exists right now in America, by the way. If you're on the list, most banks will not bank with you. Even a local bank, I think in Minnesota, they debanked Mike Lindell, MyPillow, because they said, oh, they didn't want to suffer the reputation risk of being associated with Mike Lindell, who is a true heroic patriot for America, who will go down in history, I believe, as one of the most effective and most determined and courageous individuals of our modern time. And shame on the bank that doesn't want to be associated with him, because he's one of America's heroes. But what these mid-level bankers haven't figured out is that they will not exist much longer because their banks will be insolvent. The dollar will be insolvent. The petrodollar will be obsolete. The very concept of America's dollar dominance is over. You understand? Biden's massive money printing, and honestly, it was also Trump in 2020, this last desperate blowout of stimulus money, this was it. This was the final stage. They knew that this was the end. The musical chairs were about to stop. And then so they needed a war with Russia as a cover story to achieve the great global reset, the final looting of everybody's money, the final bail-ins, the destruction of the dollar. Everything reverts to zero. You own nothing and will be happy or dead, perhaps, if that's what your government's doing to you. And in summary, what I realize is that this whole process has just begun. So it's no longer a theory. It's not like, oh, several years from now, they're going to pull the trigger and all the banks are going to go down. No, it could be like this month. It could be soon. I'm not predicting it. I can't name a date, right? It could be March, April, May. Maybe they can get by for another year. I don't know for sure, but the process has begun. The process of sanctioning Russia and having the boomerang effect come back around and take out the very fragile, over-leveraged Western financial institutions and central banks and debt-based systems that have only been held together by duct tape and bailing wire. Those systems are going to crater. And this is the genius part, the Western corporate media can blame Putin. Oh yes, you knew Putin was going to get blamed somehow for all this. So think about it, all the decades of money printing since 1971 when Nixon took us off the gold standard and they started cranking up the printing presses, all that money printing and all the debt spending and all the government corruption and all the overpayments to the weapons manufacturers just steeped in fraud and grift and everything. All of that, oh, that's not going to be blamed. No, it's Putin's fault why your bank account went to zero. And they're going to blame it on a Russian cyber attack or some kind of Russian counter measure or retaliation in the financial sector. And then, you know, the entire Western corporate media will say, oh my God, the banks are all destroyed. All the accounts are destroyed. Your money's gone to zero. It's Putin did it. It's not hard to see this coming. And then they're going to have a narrative where they roll out, oh, to be safe from Putin, you need to sign up for this new central bank digital wallet. Yeah, this is safe and secure. Trust us. All you got to do is just sign up for this wallet, put whatever money you still can scrape together into this wallet, and we'll protect you, even from yourself. We'll make sure that you don't buy too much food if you're overweight. We'll make sure that you don't buy products from companies that aren't green. Yeah? We'll make sure that you don't exceed your ammunition purchase allowance month by month. And in fact, we'll do your taxes for you and take them out of your account automatically. Welcome to the central bank digital currency system, the CBDCs. That's exactly what's coming. You know, to be safe from the Russian cyber hackers, this is going to be the excuse. We want you to be safe, you know, after we destroyed your entire country and destroyed your family, destroyed your civilization, looted all your money, tried to murder you with vaccine bioweapons. We want you to be safe. So use our digital social credit scoring automatic wallet, mark of the beast, satanic system, please. Just sign up. It's free. Until you start using it, then nothing's free. So I think this is the next step. In fact, I think they're going to do this before they try nuclear war. They're going to try the cyber warfare false flag, and they're going to try the global reset takedown of the banking infrastructure. And that's been launched now with the SWIFT systems and the disconnection of Russia. Now it's just a contagion. It's a systemic risk that spreads from bank to bank, institution to institution. Loan payments fail. Bond payments fail. Exports fail. Imports fail. Businesses fail that are in those industries. And then farmers fail in Russia for exports. Energy companies stop producing energy. Europe freezes from a lack of energy. Europe starves from a lack of fertilizer from Russia. And the whole thing just ripples downstream, causing total economic devastation that also strongly affects North America. Now, how long will this take to unravel? I don't know. It could be weeks, it could be months, maybe a year or two. I honestly don't know. But I didn't think things were going to escalate this quickly with Russia, and then Putin moved a lot faster than I thought was going to happen. So sometimes things happen more quickly than what I'm imagining, and then some other times things happen a lot more slowly. For example, you know, I've been publicly predicting the total collapse of the debt-based system since 2008. But I always said, we don't know when it's going to happen, and it'll probably be some kind of trigger event. This is the trigger, on purpose. All right. So we have a lot more to discuss here as we continue in the podcast. And you're probably not surprised. Today's sponsor is a gold and silver provider, the Treasure Island Precious Metals Company. You can find them at brightionmetals.com. And I'm bringing them in today. I only mention them about once a month or twice a month or maybe something like that. But I urge you, even though I'm not a financial advisor, obviously, I can't tell you what to do. I urge you to investigate if it's a good choice for you to have some physical gold and silver in your possession. Because of the extreme volatility, the debt-based implosion that I believe is coming. And I encourage people to diversify their assets in ways I've talked about before, right? Land and gold and silver, you know, ammunition, agricultural equipment like tractors. But also I'm going to bring in, if you can control your own crypto keys, cryptocurrency can be, or certain types of crypto can be a viable alternative for liquidity. And I think that crypto is suddenly more important because of what Canada tried to do to its citizens in the Canadian banks, looting their accounts. That just taught the whole world a lesson, like, don't use banks. So over the last couple of weeks, you would not believe how many people are now researching crypto from a very practical point of view, not a speculation point of view. What I'm seeing is a very strong shift, which is people saying, oh, I need to learn about cryptocurrency, not because I want to get rich trading Dogecoin, blah, 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 you know, speculation, overnight riches. No, I just want something that works, that can't be stolen by the government. I just want to engage in transactions. I just want to engage in business. I just want to pay providers or employees or contractors or business partners or importers or exporters. I just want to have financial transactions. What works for that, you know? So a lot of people are looking at things like XRP or Bitcoin or zero knowledge coins like Zcash and so on. And they are learning that cryptocurrencies, although it's not yet clear which one is going to emerge as the dominant force or which ones are going to avoid government attacks and so on, but crypto has a role to play, you know, alongside gold and silver and land and all these other things. So, and this is kind of a change in position for me. I've been very skeptical about all the hype around cryptocurrency, you know, all the get rich quick type of stuff around Bitcoin and so on. And the use case for it hasn't been strong at the retail level, but the use case now in terms of international transactions in the context of debanking and the SWIFT system cutting people off, suddenly the use case for cryptocurrency is nearly perfect. It suddenly makes a lot of sense, but only if you control your own keys, by the way. Remember what I said, if you don't control your keys, you don't control your crypto. So if you have an online wallet somewhere hosted on some site and they control your keys, your cryptography keys, then really they have your coins. So if you don't control your own keys, which usually means having a local wallet on your mobile phone or on your computer, you know, on your hard drive or thumb drive with your keys in your possession, if you don't have that, you don't really own your coins. So do your homework on this, folks. And by the way, I don't own any crypto, but that's probably not going to last very long. I'm probably going to diversify into some crypto at some point soon. And, you know, I'm vetting some gold and silver backed crypto right now because I don't trust anything digital that's not backed by something real. But right now, for people who need to move money around the world, you know what? Bitcoin is working. Ethereum is working for people. XRP is working and so on. But getting back to gold and silver, our sponsor is brightionmetals.com. They can also help you move out of the stock market into an IRA, excuse me, move your IRA out of the stock market into a silver vault, like vaulted silver in America and other continents, insured, audited, security guarded, fully IRS compliant. You can convert your whole IRA into physical silver, which means you're no longer subject to the risk of the market collapse that may be happening. So brightionmetals.com is where you can learn about that, or you can get physical gold and silver delivered and take possession of it, which I think is a smart move. But check your own situation. See what's appropriate for you. Gold has spiked up. I think I don't know, $20 or so per ounce recently. I haven't been tracking silver prices, but both gold and silver are very suppressed, in my view, by JP Morgan and other banks working in conjunction with the government to try to prevent people from realizing how much the dollar is losing value. But I strongly suspect, and this is my own personal analysis and conclusion, but I strongly suspect that when this global debt pyramid really begins to unravel, the dollar is going to lose so much value that even if the plunge protection team or the silver manipulation team, even if they whip up, you know, millions of ounces of paper silver to sell into the ETF marketplace and so on, even they won't be able to suppress the price. I think prices of metals, gold and silver, are going to absolutely explode at some point. But even then, it's almost like, so what? Those are prices expressed in dollars, and dollars are becoming worthless. So it's not even about how many dollars is an ounce of silver worth. It's about what is silver worth in the real world when you need to use it to buy food or to buy gas or gold coins to buy a vehicle or land or something. See, I think now looking into the future, I can see how the economy is actually going to function after the collapse of the central banks and the fiat currency. It's going to be a world where it's a combination. This is my belief. A combination of some crypto that still functions and physical gold and silver, physical goods like ammunition and food and medicine and so on. But I think it's going to be a combination. Some things happening in the digital realm, some things happening in the physical realm. But remember, the digital realm only works when the power grid works. And one of the things that they're targeting to take down is the power grid. So the question is, you know, what is crypto worth without a power grid? I've said before, it's worth zero. But will the power grid work long enough, or in regional areas? Will it be restored to where crypto commerce can take place? Maybe, it's hard to say. That's the nice thing about gold and silver, is it, of course, it's always physical. Can't vanish just because the power grid's down. So I'm all about now spreading risk quite extensively. And even at this point, I'm even encouraging people to think about buying a used vehicle as kind of a bank account on wheels. Buying a used vehicle and sitting on it as a way to save money. No, seriously, because as long as you don't add miles to the vehicle, it doesn't lose much value. Because vehicles are more about miles than about the actual years of age. And for some vehicles, if you hold on to them long enough, they get more valuable the older they get. But generally speaking, if you buy a vehicle and you park it, just start it up once a month or so, keep the oil running, it's going to hold most of its value. And that's a savings account if you think about it. A savings account that's hard for governments to loot because it's not digital. They can't just yank it out of your bank account. They'd have to come take it out of your garage, which is, you know, a more difficult level of intervention. You know, and in a similar fashion, a food supply is kind of money in the bank, so to speak, because everybody has to eat. Food has value. It's universal. You don't have to sell anybody on food, especially if they start to get hungry. It's like, well, what do you want in exchange for that, you know, bucket of food or whatever you have here, bag of rice? What do you want for that? And you name your price, you know? What would be fair? I don't know. 10 silver coins. How about that? 5 gallons of gasoline. I don't know. It's going to be an interesting market. Or a box of 20 rounds of Winchester 308 hunting rounds. That's going to be valuable. I was shopping for ammo recently, by the way, and I noticed that the 308 rounds are now like $3 and something per round for the good hunting rounds. That's what I used to pay for 338 Lapua Magnum rounds. And now the 338 Lapua rounds are $9 a round. Can you imagine pulling the trigger 3 times? You're like, you know, there goes $27 downrange. And we're still trying to sight this sucker in. Just sighting in your rifle could cost $100. No, seriously, this is why a lot of people are not going to be up to speed on their gun skills. It's just too expensive to do all that shooting. You know, you have to really spend a lot of money to keep your skills up. Now, that's going to become a factor in where all this is headed. Now we're going to get into what this means for you and I on a very practical level and potentially what we can do about it. But if I could just try to more succinctly summarize this whole concept of what we're focused on today. Western nations of governments trying to punish Russia. They've engaged in debanking and disconnection from SWIFT systems and other financial systems, including Visa and MasterCard, money transfer systems, Google Pay, Apple Pay, all these and many others. They've tried to disconnect Russia. It's all going to backfire on the West because it's going to accelerate the de-dollarization of the world. More and more countries around the world are going to move into alternative, that is SWIFT alternative systems of settling international transactions. These systems, there's one system that's run by Russia. I forgot what it's called, like SPFS or something similar. There's one that's already run by China, CIPS is what it's called. Russia and China are going to do business with each other outside of SWIFT. And then many other countries around the world are going to join maybe both Russia's system or China's system. The long-term effect is going to be the collapse of the dollar and the collapse of the petrodollar status of the dollar. And this will mean the collapse of the American empire. It's done. It's done. It's already set in stone as of right now. So have no doubt about where this ends. This ends with the dollar being worth zero. Zilch. Zippo. Nada. That's where the dollar ends up. And anybody holding dollars is going to get nada. Okay? So that's where we are. Now, what is this going to look like? Oh, and remember, these are the geniuses that tell us they're going to solve these problems. And, you know, Biden's State of the Union speech, he said he's going to, you know, tackle inflation. And you know how these morons tackle inflation? They print more money, which causes more inflation, of course. But I wanted to show you this video here from Seattle. This is a video taken on the streets of Seattle, and it shows you what Seattle looks like. This is 3rd Avenue, downtown Seattle. This is what it looks like today. This is apparently between Pike and Pine Street, downtown Seattle, okay? Check this out and notice this is before the total economic collapse that's coming. Here we go. All right, so check out all the trash. You can see just the drug use, the desperation. What's that guy doing with a bunch of... His pants are down around his knees. Just homeless people, desperate. What is that woman doing? It's like, look like a zombie. I think I've seen this in a video game. There's some dude in a wheelchair and a cigarette. Somebody's still wearing a mask over there. What is this? Oh, a lot of people are masked. What are they doing? Shooting up in their toes? Here's a scooter, just trash everywhere. People wandering around like they have nowhere to go, nothing to do. Oh, here's a McDonald's. Here's some dude slumped over, shooting up on his leg veins or something, maybe one of those selling drugs right there. Who are these people? What are they? Oh, someone's smoking a bong. Is that Hunter Biden? Is that the free crack pipe hand? More people smoking bongs. This dude's having trouble. He's obviously having withdrawal symptoms. That guy's got some nice sneakers, probably looted them from a store across the street. Folks, that dude, pull up your pants, man. My goodness. This is Seattle right now today, okay? This is not even, go ahead and pause that. It's making me dizzy. That's just insane. That's Seattle right now. Can you believe it? And this, remember, this is before the collapse. Well, I guess we're kind of in the collapse in some way, but that's Seattle. And by the way, Los Angeles looks a lot like that in many areas. Areas of Portland look like that. San Francisco, Chicago, you know, New York City, even some sections. Not all of it looks that bad, but a lot of it does. And it's only going to get worse. So here's, on a practical note, here's where all this is headed. You've got all the economic sanctions, the banking deplatforming, the disconnections. Russia and Ukraine normally export a lot of things. And I've mentioned some of them yesterday, you know, wheat, corn, and soy, lithium, aluminum, copper, manganese, cobalt. I forgot to mention palladium and nickel. So add palladium and nickel to your list, and a lot of other things too. There's certain lasers and gases that are used in lasers that come out of Ukraine that are used for semiconductor manufacturing, by the way, which means more microchip shortages to look forward to. Oh yeah, the joy. So what it's going to look like is you're going to have product shortages out the wazoo that make 2020 and 2021 look like a warm-up round at a little kitty T-ball game. I mean, that you're going to look back at that and say, well, that was no problem. We just had a little teepee shortage there at Costco and some food shortages, but we got through it. Well, get ready for what's coming next. Food prices are going to go through the roof. Product supply chains are going to collapse. And in the cities like the scene that we just saw, this means that crime and looting and flash mob theft is going to absolutely explode. And so some of those zombies that you saw there on the sidewalk shooting up and doing drugs and stumbling around, imagine a whole city full of people, not just like that, but active looters, violent criminals, you know, people breaking into shops, people setting things on fire. Basically, it's like a Black Lives Matter / Antifa protest 24/7 every day in every blue city. You know, that's what it's going to be. Something like that. But instead of looting fashion purses and tennis shoes, they're going to be looting grocery stores. And so you're going to see flash mobs going into grocery stores, you know, 20, 25 people stealing all the meat. Everything from hot dogs to steaks to chicken wings, everything. Just looting all the meat. And then what's going to happen is these grocery stores are going to shut down in a lot of these cities. Just like the pharmacies have shut down because of all the shoplifting that's been going on. And also some of these blue cities with George Soros-funded DAs, they have legalized a certain amount of shoplifting because, you know, Ocasio-Cortez said, well, these people needed that stuff, like, you know. And then that was a horrible... Sorry, I can't do her voice. It would hurt to try. But people are looting so much so that the pharmacy shut down. Grocery stores are going to shut down. So then a lot of the people who live in these cities, they're going to have no grocery stores. And they're already living in food deserts, so to speak, where they don't have much of a selection. So where are they going to go for food? Convenience stores. So they're going to start looting the crap out of convenience stores. And stealing processed junk food like Funyuns, whatever those are, and Cheetos, and Doritos, and Pop-Tarts, right? If you ever wake up one morning and your life consists of looting a convenience store to steal Doritos and Pop-Tarts, you've kind of hit bottom. I mean, the only thing to add to that would be a crack pipe at that point. It's like, I need a couple of puffs to get the energy to go loot for Pop-Tarts, you know, that's, you've hit that Hunter Biden moment. You need some help. And you might need to get out of the city at that point, but that's where these cities are going. Now, for those of you and I who don't live in the cities, we're still going to get hammered too with supply chain disruptions. So anything that you need to buy might be a new pair of shoes, a jacket, you know, parts for a car or a truck or a tractor or almost anything. It's going to be out of stock. It's going to be a long waiting period for that thing that you needed or that part. Or, like I've panicked over, belts for tractors, you know? The V-belts. Load up on them while you can. You're not going to be able to get the parts. Not even parts for your firearms either, by the way. So it's a good idea to make sure they're all working well now. And I happen to buy extra bolt carrier groups for the AR platform. I do. I buy extra BCGs and bolts, the bolt part of the BCG, and firing pins, you know, buy extra firing pins. So just have the parts that you might need. And if you own an AR-15, you know, you're going to need a lot of those little springs and little indents that fly off every time you disassemble your rifle, you know, when you're trying to take the buttstock off and you take that little cover off on the back end of the receiver, and you forget, and it's like, boom, all these little metal indents go flying across the room. and they're gone, totally gone, and you need spares because you can never find those things. I don't think I've ever found one yet. Someday, if I could drag a magnet around the floor, I'd probably find like 15 little AR-15 parts. And oh, there they are. I've made that mistake more than once. But think about it. You're not going to be able to buy the gear that you need. You're not going to get batteries. You're not going to get flashlights. You're not going to be able to buy, you know, rocket stoves and water filters and all the other survival gear that you can get now. So one of the obvious conclusions in this, and let me preface this by saying, you know, do what's right for you. Make your own decision. But in my view, and I'm not into raw consumerism for the purpose of consuming and buying stuff. That's not what I'm into. But at this moment in history, under these conditions, it seems to me that the best strategic choice is to flood out of the dollar and get into gear that will last. And that could be a used car, like I said, that will actually serve as a bank account on wheels. It could be firearms. It could be ammunition. It could be food, emergency medicine. It could be land. It could be gold or silver, as I mentioned before. BrightonMetals.com. That's our gold and silver sponsor. If that's a right choice for you, talk to them. They can get you delivery, obviously. In my view, the dollar is going to go to zero. And so we need to start thinking the way that citizens had to think in Venezuela or Argentina during hyperinflation, or, you know, Ecuador during hyperinflation. And just think about all the hyperinflation events throughout history, you know, Weimar Germany and so on. There are hundreds of examples of currencies collapsing, and the dollar is going to be the next one on the list. Probably before very long, we're going to look back, and it's going to be a chapter of history. It was the era of dollar domination. It was the era of the petrodollar. It was the era when a dollar could buy a lot of stuff, where you could get all kinds of stuff. You could buy a flashlight made in China for a dollar. There were dollar stores. You could go into the dollar store and buy something for a dollar. And we're going to look back at that and say, wow, those are the good old days. And we didn't have to really work that hard compared to the way we're working now. Because the dollar's done. The dollar will suffer demise. The dollar will be decimated. Yes, I'm thinking of words that start with D. And the dollar has been backed by demonic dumbasses this entire time who are trying to destroy this democracy. And they've done a pretty incredible job of doing it, right? And by the way, they have a D beside their name. They're Democrats too. Or demon rats or something like that. Yeah, even though they're demons, they done did it. They've done destroyed it, as we say. Remember the old Hall & Oates song? You did it, you did it, you did it, you did it, you did it in a minute. Remember that song? It was almost contraband to listen to that. It's like, that song is so dirty. What are you talking about? These days, that should be the song slogan of the Democrats. You destroyed it, you demolished it, deconstructed it, you did it in a minute, or, you know, some horribly lame version of that. But there's not going to be enough time. You know, when the signs are obvious to everybody, there's not going to be enough time because the demolition is going to be in progress. The cascading bank to bank contagion, the total collapse of the debt leveraged global, you know, house of cards, debt bomb system, whatever you want to call it. It's coming down. The de-dollarization of the world has begun. And I need to get, who's the guest? The dollar collapse guy. I need to get him back on to interview him and see what he thinks about all this. I'm sure he would be like, yep, well, we called it. I mean, he's known as the dollar collapse guy. And I've interviewed him a few times. So we are headed into an era of hyperinflation, which goes hand in hand with dollar devaluation, but on an accelerating scale. So it's not just the shortages, you know, not being able to get the parts, not being able to get food. It's that when it is available, it's incredibly expensive. It's like triple or quadruple. Or as the famous actor John Malkovich would say, because he has a speaking style where he emphasizes every word in a sentence. Like every word is the emphasis. He would say something like, "It's as if all your assets were suddenly devalued all at once." It's like, John, pick the word to emphasize. Let the others chill. No, but I love John Malkovich. I'm just teasing him. He's a talented actor, but his voice style, isn't it? His delivery is very unusual, shall we say. So, by the way, as a little preview of all of this, this is amazing. The South China Morning Post is reporting this. Wait, did you hear this story? In Hong Kong, they're going to do a quote, large-scale lockdown in the second half of March. Like, they're pre-planning a lockdown for the second half of March. Like, prepared to be slaves again. But experts say exercise should be deferred until the fifth wave peaks. So they're, this again, this is from scmp.com. They're going to do mass testing in order to perpetuate the case-demic. So they've already announced, we're going to mass test everybody, and then we're going to have a lockdown because we're going to have so many cases because we're doing all the testing. And it's like, hey, did you ever think, you know, you communist health authorities in Hong Kong now, did you ever think that if you didn't do the tests, you wouldn't have the cases, you wouldn't need the lockdowns, everybody'd be fine? You know the way to end COVID is to stop the fraudulent PCR testing for it. Because if you keep testing, you're just going to find more COVID. But that, you're wondering, like, what does this have to do with economics? Well, here's the kicker. Reuters is reporting, here it is, Hong Kong leader calls for calm after supermarkets were emptied ahead of mass COVID testing. Oh, so Hong Kong leader Carrie Lam called for calm on Tuesday after residents emptied the supermarket stocking up on produce ahead of reports of compulsory mass testing and rumors of a citywide lockdown. So, and then Lam said to the people, quote, not to fall prey to rumors to avoid unnecessary fears being stirred. It's like, what did you think would happen? You lunatics. I'm talking about the government people. You announce there's going to be a lockdown. You announce you're going to do mass testing. Of course the people are going to go out and stock up because they're going to go through a forced lockdown. And then the government says, oh, stop panicking, you wussies. Well, hey, Lam and other Hong Kong so-called leaders, you know, we don't have your deep underground military bases and bunkers and cities full of food. You know, the rest of us, we, the real people of the world, we have to live in houses and apartments and, you know, shacks and maybe tents and barns and barn dominiums. We don't have underground bunkers. We got to stock up. So, of course, people are going to go to the grocery stores and empty the shelves. Well, what do you think is going to happen when the dollar starts losing value at the rate of, say, 20% a month? Because, you know, right now the dollar is losing, what, 25-30% a year? And that's pretty conservative. You could argue 35%, 40% in the last year. When the dollar starts losing 20% a month, you're starting to approach, you know, a percent a day. Start compounding that. And people are going to say, whoa, let's go have an emergency spending spree and get rid of these dollars. And what governments do when that happens is, and this is already happening under Biden, is the Biden regime will start announcing, look at the velocity of money. The velocity is so high, the economy must be strong. And you're like, no, you morons. People are fleeing the dollar in panic. They're getting out of it. That's why there's money velocity. You know, velocity is the measure of how many times money changes hands in a given segment of time. So the money velocity is very high. And they say, well, the economy must be good. Look, everybody's out shopping and buying. It's like, no, they're panic stockpiling. Well, or strategic stockpiling maybe is a better term. They're getting rid of the dollars because your dollar is going to zero, Biden. It is going to be interesting, though, that a Democrat was in the White House when the dollar went to zero. That's That's going to be a little historical factoid. Cause I don't think we're making it to 2025 without a dollar collapse. That's just my guess. We'll see. Sometimes these things take longer than I think, but we are in an age of rapid acceleration. But I thought that story out of Hong Kong really painted a very educational picture of what people are going to do when they anticipate a coming event where they would not have access to food, you know, either from lockdowns or from a catastrophic fiat currency collapse type of event. Like if you knew your dollars were going to be worth even 20% less next month, would you save any dollars? Well, of course not. You wouldn't save any dollars. You'd spend it. And that's what people are doing. You'd buy something you could use because if you buy it today, you're getting a 20% discount effectively compared to next month. and then, you know, 2 months, think about 3 or 4 months down the road, you know, it doesn't take too many months before you've lost half the purchasing power. So here's a story from Reuters. $10 toothpaste. U.S. household goods makers face blowback on price hikes. Says Colgate Palmolive Company, Noel Wallace, said last week that the household goods maker sees its new Optic White Pro Series toothpaste as a premium product that's vital to its ability to raise prices. Really, Optic White Pro? What's pro about toothpaste? It's not like there's a gifted athlete in your mouth scrubbing your teeth. There's nothing pro. It's the same overpriced stuff. It's baking soda and some chemicals and some sweeteners and some emulsifiers. You can make this stuff for a few pennies yourself, by the way. Nevertheless, so $10 tube of toothpaste is what Reuters is warning about. And, you know, I'm an advocate of learning how to make your own stuff. Make your own household cleaners. Learn how much you can do with D-limonene, by the way. D-limonene. That's an extract from citrus. It's so amazing around the house. You can do so much with D-limonene. And it's oil soluble as well, by the way. You can do a lot with baking soda. You can do a lot with vinegar, with ammonia, isopropyl alcohol. And just start learning how to make your own stuff. I do that myself. And I'm not a penny pincher from the point of view of wanting to pinch pennies. I just want to be self-reliant. I just want to know, how do you make laundry detergent? By the way, most of it's just borax. It's like, take some borax and then add more borax and you've got laundry detergent. Or add baking soda to it. You have pro laundry detergent, you know? Learn how to make stuff yourself. Learn how to grow your own food. I've been raving about the hydroponic, non-circulating suspended net pot systems, right? I'm all about being self-reliant, and that means making your own stuff, or at least having the knowledge, having the basic ingredients. Part of what I'm kind of stocking up on, by the way, a little personal insight here. If you look at my shelves right now, I've got a lot of bulk ingredients of the things I just mentioned. I've got many, many pounds of baking soda. I've got a pallet of zinc sulfate for some reason that we haven't used yet. It ended up at my place, for formulations. Let's see. That's a lot of zinc, by the way. I've got, caustic soda, which is known as lye, very alkaline. And then I have some acids, lactic acid, for example, which is used in some formulations. I do a lot of formulating of different products. You know, I formulated the colloidal silver first aid gel that we sell at the Health Ranger store. That's my formulation, you know, the seven essential oils plus xanthan gum and the colloidal silver made from Texas rainwater. I made that. I've been working on deodorant formulations with baking soda. Haven't been able to release that yet. I've been working on formulations for nasal sprays. I've done some of the mouthwash formulations as well. Not all of them, but some of them. And the truth is, for me, this has been a great exercise because I've learned how to make these things, but I share this information publicly. It's not like, I'm not like Procter & Gamble's, a super secret formula, you know, secret patented ingredient list. No, I'll just tell you what it is and how to make it. because I want you to be self-reliant. If you choose to buy the product because you're too busy to make it, that's fine. But you should also know how to make it yourself. And this gets back to where we're going in the world. If you want to cut costs, number one, stop buying anything made by Procter & Gamble. And by the way, guys, you don't need shaving cream. The shaving cream does nothing for your shaving except to keep track of where you've been. It's just a marking system. That's all it is. Shaving cream doesn't do anything. It doesn't make your beard softer. It's all nonsense. You don't need shaving cream and you don't need aftershave. You know what all you need? Just some cheap soap and some cheap isopropyl alcohol. That's it. That's your aftershave. Get a bottle of IPA, dab a little on your face. You just save yourself 99% right there. Do I use overpriced Procter & Gamble garbage? Not a chance. I don't think I have anything made by P&G in my bathroom, in my pantry, in my house. Not because I'm anti-P&G, although everybody should be because they created Crisco, but because I'm not stupid. I don't waste money on overpriced ingredients that you can buy simply yourself. I mean, Windex. What is Windex? I mean, I'm just going from memory, but I'm pretty sure it's like 90% water with a little blue dye in it, a little bit of ammonia, maybe a little bit of isopropyl alcohol or something like that. It's mostly just ammonia with water and blue dye. I mean, people, you can make that yourself for pennies. And in these times that are coming, you're going to need to do that. Stop paying crazy prices for overpriced Procter & Gamble crap in the grocery store, the cleaning solutions, the overpriced bar of soap with fragrance in it, you know, the overpriced shampoos, they're just garbage. The body lotions, they're all garbage. Get yourself some coconut oil, folks. Spread it around a little bit. You can use it for cleaning guns. I'm not even joking. You can use it for cooking. It's a survival food. It's a skin cream. It's the base for lotions, for rashes, all kinds of stuff. Coconut oil, you can use it for everything. Use it as a personal lubricant, for God's sake. It's a multi-use substance. And yes, you can clean guns with it too. It actually cleans guns and it lubricates guns. Seriously. And it's a superfood. I mean, think about how you can save money by investing in bulk ingredients that can do the things that you need and stop wasting money on overpriced garbage in the grocery store. This is going to become a financial survival skill and even just a regular hardcore survival skill in terms of just having supplies, you know, and it's dirt cheap. You know how cheap baking soda is? You know what? Let's do a little challenge here. I'm going to do this with you. Let's go on to Brighteon.com. I'm going to check there first. I know YouTube will have these videos, but I'm wondering about Brighteon.com. If you type in the search engine on Brighteon.com, baking soda, let's see what comes up. Oh, look, baking soda benefits, killing mycoplasma. Baking soda uses for SHTF. There you go. 10-minute video, all the things you can do with baking soda. 7 unexpected benefits of baking soda. Lemon and baking soda. Here's one. How to use baking soda for canker sores. And then baking soda, the true enemy of the pharmaceutical industry. Let's see. 7 ways to use amazing baking soda in the garden. 10 benefits of baking soda for hair, skin, and body. 10 baking soda tricks every woman and man should know. I wonder what that's all about. It's got a picture of like a cartoon butt on that. 10 tricks and some woman slapping her cartoon butt. That should be odd. revitalize your health with the cancer fighting properties of baking soda and lemon. And it just goes on and on and on. Oh, here's one. Why you need to pour baking soda on your mattress once a month. That's a new one. Science confirms baking soda can be used to treat various autoimmune diseases. All right, so these are just some of the videos that I'm seeing right now in real time, just searching for baking soda. And you would think that maybe like our sponsor is a baking soda mining company or something, but no, I'm just telling you, this stuff, I mean, it used to be 50 cents a pound. Maybe now it's $1 a pound in bulk, I'm not sure. But you can buy 50, 100 pounds of this stuff in bulk and then just have knowledge of, you know, the 100 ways that you can use it in everything. And there's no shame in that. In fact, you should celebrate it. Celebrate having a redundant supply, you know, a deep supply of baking soda and knowing how to use it. And that's just one example. So many other examples of basic ingredients that you can stock up on that are dirt cheap, but can be life-saving in emergencies, like isopropyl alcohol. So there you go. There's my advice. Some more interesting advice each day. You're going to learn something interesting here. That's my promise to you. Today, we learned to pour baking soda on your mattress. I'm going to have to watch that video and find out. Is it to kill bed bugs? What is, wouldn't that be a powdery slumber? It's like, I had this nightmare that I was sinking in the desert and there was sand all over me and I woke up. It was just baking soda. It's all okay. Like, what is that? You can't use baking soda for literally everything. Just know its uses. That's all I'm saying. I'm sorry. I'm having a little too much fun. I may have had too much tea. That's my problem. I'm sorry. It's the baking soda barrage. It's like, oh my God, the Russian troops have arrived. What are they launching? Baking soda mortars. They've dusted the entire city in baking soda. None of us can see. It's horrible. No, I don't mean to make light of that. I'm sorry. Totally inappropriate, but I'm sorry. Baking soda is not for everything, but it is for a lot of things. You get my point. Okay. That's my podcast for today. Before I get into way too much trouble, I'll probably get some crazy responses on this already. Just in summary, I want to remind you to be resourceful, stock up, but do so wisely. Don't stock up on brand name overpriced products. Stock up on bulk materials and, you know, maybe food, because you can't necessarily make that yourself, but learn how to grow it. Learn how to make your own things. Learn how to be cost effective and redundant in your preparedness, because the supply chains are going down. Dollars going to zero. I'm convinced. It's just a matter of when. That's all. It's just a matter of when. Consider our sponsor, BrightonMetals.com. That's the Treasure Island Precious Metals Company. Also, HealthRangerStore.com. We still have some iodine tincture, but we are sold out of the Iosat potassium iodide tablets. Those are sold out now, and it's going to be many months before those come back into stock. Like literally, I think 6 months at this, because the manufacturer is like, ah, thanks to Putin, we're sold out for 6 months. Okay. But we still have iodine in the liquid form, the nascent iodine tincture. And we've got other supplies, you know, food and so on. So thank you for your support. Thank you for tolerating my lame attempts at humor today and a really awful John Malkovich impersonation, which doesn't even count. And we'll talk with you tomorrow with whatever crazy news is happening then, but also I'm going to try to bring you solutions and knowledge each and every day. Thank you for listening. Be sure to check out Brighteon.tv. Oh, real quick, I've got interviews. I interviewed Del Bigtree. That's going to get posted. I interviewed Scott McKay. I interviewed Nick Searcy, the filmmaker who made Capital Punishment. That's coming out later this week. And I've got other interviews coming up. I'm going to have to check my calendar and see who they're all with, but it's all interesting people. So check those out at Brighteon.com. Thanks for listening. Have a great day. God bless you all.